First of all, there was no way to save everyone. The outbreak was too far gone. The armed forces had already been too badly weakened to effectively isolate the threat and spread so thinly throughout the country they could only grow weaker with each passing day. Our forces had to be consolidated, withdrawn to a special safe zone, which hopefully would be aided by some natural obstacles such as mountains, rivers, or even an offshore island. Once concentrated within this zone, the armed forces could eradicate the infestation within its borders, then use what resources were available to defend it against further onslaughts of the living dead. That was the first part of the plan. And it made as much sense as any conventional military retreat. The second part of the plan dealt with the evacuation of civilians. And this could not have been envisioned by anyone else but Redeka. In his mind, only a small fraction of the civilian population could be evacuated to the safe zone. These people would be saved not only to provide a labor pool for the eventual wartime economic restoration, but also to preserve the legitimacy and stability of the government, to prove to those already within the zone that the leaders were looking out for them. There was another reason for this partial evacuation. An eminently logical and insidiously dark reason that many believe will forever ensure Redeka the tallest pedestal in the pantheon of hell. Those who were left behind were to be herded into special isolated zones. They were to be human bait, distracting the undead from following the retreating army to their safe zone. Redeka argued that these isolated, uninfected refugees must be kept alive, well defended and even resupplied if possible, so as to keep the undead hordes firmly rooted to the spot. You see the genius, the sickness, keeping people as prisoners because every zombie besieging those survivors will be one less zombie throwing itself against our defenses. That was the moment when the Afrikaner agent looked up at Redeka and crossed himself. God help you, man, he said. God help us all, said one of the other agents, a black one who appeared to be in charge of the operation. Now let's get him out of here. Within minutes, they were on a chopper for Kimberley, the very underground base where Redeka had first written Orange 84. He was ushered into a meeting of the president's surviving cabinet, where his report was read aloud to the room. You should have heard the uproar, with no voice louder than the defense minister's. Unacceptable! He bellowed. He was a Zulu, a ferocious man who would rather be fighting in the streets than cowering in a bunker. Running, hiding, cowering behind mountains, never! He was not alone. How can we explain this to our people? Said the vice president. They'll be after our backsides faster than those things out there. The president was incensed, glaring at the safety security minister in command of the NIA. This is what you bring me, he snapped. The maniacal ramblings of an apartheid war criminal. Mr. President, said the clearly rattled security minister, you instructed me to find and retrieve Mr. Redeka.
I did no such thing,
the president shot back. But Mr. President, the security minister stammered, I received an order.
Not from me, bellowed the president.
From me. That was another voice. A soft, quiet voice that silenced the room like thunder from God himself.